This is my second one on the West Coast. It's only taken me 30 years or 33 years since the basic text was written to get out here and do a workshop. This is the second one for me. So that gives you some idea of the auspiciousness of this occasion. And I'm aware that I have been an active participant since 1977. I worked hard on my recovery because when I got clean, it was 1974. And after a few months, I had the feeling that I was gonna really, you know, get involved. This seems to be my cup of tea. I like this. I had been looking for a long time for people on the planet who actually lived by spiritual principles and got results. And so, and then I had run a nonprofit on the Strip for a couple of years, and it got so rough down there, I carried a loaded six gun after dark. You know, which is, might sound kind of like, you know, fun, but it's really not. I've been personally intact. When you're very, 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 very well known, then people attack and destroy the things they give you. And I had had several fist fights, and I was a street man, so I knew a lot about getting your ass whooped. And if you just keep thinking you can take on these motherfuckers, sooner or later, something's going to send you to heaven or whatever. But once I started carrying a six gun, it kind of slowed that down, you know, actually to a virtual standstill. But I was all really careful. I never shot anybody. I never wanted to. But I had a lot of experiences before I got here. And it crept up in my heart about how shitty I was going to feel if I didn't work the 12 steps. You know, and I got to loving ENA and getting really involved in shit and be a phony baloney. So I spent the first 3 years till 77 working hard on the 12 steps, as hard as I could with the little resources we had. But the biggest resources was a man or a woman on their knees sincerely praying for knowledge of recovery. And that still remains the best source of information for all of us. It's one way to broaden our movie screen from a mere flashlight to something with a better bandwidth. And that's what we do at these ministry conferences. And I've said it to about 20, 30 people so far since yesterday. You might hear just one tiny-ass little thing that changes your whole opinion and what you've been thinking and telling people for years at a history conference. Because you'll hear eyewitness accounts. And anybody can make up shit and put it on paper, or Facebook, or wherever. But that's a projection of their view. And all the colors and the images are there from their view. And you know, some people don't have a particularly accurate view. And so a history conference is the way that we counteract all this crap, you know, with face-to-face. And plus, I'll tell you one thing my sponsor, Bob Barrett, told me. He says, Bo, I have seen people that know each other's names and will just instantly vilify one another for decades. And the only thing at stake is they might, if they made amends and found out what they're really upset about, they might have to jerk back a little snot. You know, just afraid of those emotions. So, you know, those of you that are new, knowledge is power. I'm a hippie. I was gassed, and, you know, for fighting against the war. And I believe in, you know, all power to the people. And I really, really do. And I carry that with me into where I live. So you should know who I am and where I come from. And all that is before recovery. The world I saw before recovery really didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. NA is what completes the picture. When I interface with another addict seeking recovery and feel that same wavelength set in, boy, that's just like confirming the existence of a higher power. I mean, there's nothing like it. So anyway, after my 3 years was up, and actually I didn't exactly, you know, stopwatch myself, but you know, there was a world convention in San Francisco. I'd been writing letters to WSO, where is Group Conscience? What is its name? Does it have an address? I mean, maybe kind of mildly insulting. I mean, not at first, but they got heavier and heavier. And I remember one letter I wrote with another group member where we repeated the same questions in a 9-page letter. I mean, not like just, you know, but we just kept saying it in other words because we really want to know so we could participate, so we could be, you know, addiction is sectioning a person off from reality and society and everything. And then recovery is you want to be an integral part of the whole. So you want to like rejoin humanity. And if you're in NA, you want to like be an effective part of your fellowship. Because, you know, we were all told that we were part of the fellowship and we believed it, and it was in the NA tree. One thing that was in the NA tree I haven't seen a lot of in the last 20 years is that, you know, a resource DNA is what we are that are sharing here. And even the person that is just sharing among members, you know, onesie, twosie, threesie, they're still resources DNA. And things that you learn here and hear here or take home in writing, you're in the tapes. That's going to mean something to people back home. And the more we have accurate, true, real information, you can cut up a phone number, a phone book, and take all the numbers and put them in a big sack. And you still got every number in New York City. It's kind of hard to find Bill Smith. But you can painstakingly reassemble them, put them back in formation, and it becomes very easy. So a lot of us in Narcotics Anonymous that love the NA and are grateful and want to help, we spend some of our time pasting the phone numbers back together where it's easier for people to find the information. And we'll do the work to put it. We don't color it or change Bill's address, but we just make it where you can find it when you're ready. See? And everybody's only ready for a certain amount of stuff, you know? So I had two little things, gratitude to Alcoholics Anonymous, a really cool guy that was kind of a printer, like that's what I am too, is he's speaking to me, and this is before the basic text work really began, and he said, well, I'd recommend two things. One, base your book on real addict experience. Exclude vigorously anything that smacks of plagiarism or great ideas, because you don't need them. They'll turn addicts off and they'll say, oh shit, not again. You know, hoodwinked again. And but if it's real addict, and anybody in the world can argue with you if it's just a good idea or plagiarism. Anybody, any idiot on the sidewalk still using can pick you apart. But nobody in the world can argue with your real personal experience, whatever it was. And that's a key thing, so I'm grateful to good old Dave G. I don't think he's with us anymore. I've been, I don't know, a good part of my 41 years since I saw him. Because I only go to NA. And I'm a little bit strict about that because in the old days we had people coming by our meetings to see our girls and they were going to treatment again and the guy would be back next week. And a funny thing happened. When we became willing to meet him in the parking lot and say, you can't do that anymore. When we became willing, it stopped happening. And I think there's something in the program that was lost when it was changed in the literature from willingness to try, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness to try. Because that's what it used to say. And now it says willingness, honesty, open-mindedness, willing, H-O-W. See it on stickers and stuff. But see, that's not really it. When it's magic, when you're willing to try, that's when it changes. And when you're not willing to try, it's forced on you again and again and again and again. That's what's called a resentment. It's like a piece of mail that appears in your mailbox, and then the next day it's the same piece, and the next day, until you get the lesson. And once you say, oh, okay, God, I got it. Stops coming. Well, you get new things, but you know, that's just the journey, right? Okay, so what really grossed me out was I had all these people in line. And when I got clean, there was no NA. And my first meetings were in 71, not when I got clean. I was trying to start NA in Georgia in 71, after the thing I was involved with. You know, Vietnam War shut down, so, you know, they kind of put the hippie movement out of the job. We did stop the war. There still needs to be a movie about that. Anybody is free to write that. And then with 50 people clinging to us as our babies, our newcomers, we could no longer answer their questions. How many meetings are there in California? Where is group conscious and what is its name? And what about this and what about that? Now they had the NA tree, because that came out in 75. Greg P. wrote that from 72 to 74, I think. It got approved by the board of trustees in 75, and it took several attempts to get the World Service Conference started. It was attempted in 77 when I went out to San Francisco for the World Convention, but the RSR from Los Angeles drove up for the first meeting of the World Service Conference, and the RSR from San Francisco couldn't drive across town. I mean, maybe his car was broke, right? But so it bombed out. So the next year, Greg tried it again. And this time he came in with enabling motions, which is something to know about, because there were enabling motions that created the World Service Conference. And you'll see why I'm going into this later. But so in 1977, I met Greg because I was asking Jimmy and other people about who's working on our book. And everybody said, oh, go see him. He's the chairman of the board of trustees. So I said, okay, if anybody knows, he'll know. And actually what he said after a couple of hours that nobody in the world is working on our literature. That wasn't what I wanted to hear. I was actually convinced in my mind that there had to be some man or woman somewhere working on our book. Had to be. If we'd started back in 93, had to be. Anything else is unacceptable. Crazy. I don't think I'm crazy. Other people might think so, but you know, I don't let that hold me back. I love waking up my spirit. But anyway, Greg and I became fast friends. He had written the NA tree, so he knew the service structure, which was never implemented fully, by the way. And a few scholars among you can co-sign what I'm saying, because you have to read and study to know whether it's true or not. And I say it's true. It was never fully implemented, because under the NA tree, any member anywhere can ask a question or participate or get an answer. You know, it was open to all. Every member in the world was important. That was the bottom line. That's what Greg, you know, worked hard to produce in the NA tree. And subsequent versions are different then, they're very different. But anyway, over the next 2 years, we became friends. I said, who can write literature? He says, any member. I said, well, I'm a member. So I kept writing shit, you know, and sending it over there. I just make up stuff, you know, on a Saturday and write down what I'd say or expect to hear in the NA meeting. And after a while, I got about 40 pages. I went down to Zayers and brought me a $50 little blue plastic typewriter with the letter line that went like that, kind of a boogie-woogie on paper. And I wrote maybe 75 or 100 pages and sent them out to Greg and talked to him occasionally on the phone. It was more expensive than cell phones back then, and a lot more. I meant the cost to buy cell phones. But we met in Houston, the next World Convention. The first set, that was World Convention of NA 7 in San Francisco in 1977, 78 it was the 8th, and 79 was the 9th. So we went to Houston, I hooked up with Greg a week before in New Orleans, and we went around, you know, and ate chicken and went down to Vaucouray and had a good time, black beans and rice. and red beans and rice. But then we flew over to Houston and, you know, enjoyed the World Convention. I was on the bid committee, was a co-chair with Pat McLaughlin, who was here earlier, maybe here now. But we got the bid in Houston, okay? And there were about 150 people from California with they were setting their standards really high. And not talking about other fellowships, they were talking about NA. And they were there to carry the message and encourage us from the East Coast. About 150 people from the East Coast. That's where the message started really getting carried. And that's why the World Convention moved out. Before that, it had moved from Northern California to Southern, and then back to the North, and then somehow it was every year they kind of handed it off. And then all of a sudden, the World Convention's loose. It's outside the California cage. It's over in Houston, Texas. When they got the bid, I don't think there was a single NA meeting in Houston. So they ran home and started a bunch of NA meetings. But they had a pretty good convention. And their buffet was just the best I've ever eaten. But Atlanta put in a bid. That's how I got to co-chair of the 79 World Convention. And that was my first experience with really, you know, doing a world level something. So I kept calling, you know, San Francisco and Houston and WSO and saying, are there any guidelines for doing this? I want to do a good job. There's got to be some guidelines. And of course there weren't. And it took a little while to kind of hammer that out, you know, really firmly establish it. And so we had a very nice Young People's AA convention. The only thing really good for NA out of the Atlanta World Convention was that we started 200 NA meetings in the South within 6 months. So it was sort of this proof that NA sort of existed somewhere and could and should be taken seriously. And I was also an Atlanta Lit Chair, so I knew a lot of them because I was shipping literature to them. And literatures were filled or not filled, you know, it just depended on how lucky you were. And anyway, I won't go into that a lot, but I was able to eventually help with that, although nobody knows it. I didn't say it right. But I went back out to the conference in 1979 because Tommy B had been elected to chair the World Service Conference. And he said, "Boy, if you want to help with that book, you need to be out there in Los Angeles. Go to that, you know, come be down at, you know, Valley College. And that's where you ought to be if you want to help with that." So I shrugged and I went. And you'd get a round trip ticket for $250 back then. And so I got elected World Lit Chair. Basically, I think, on the strength of having written the 100 pages and having sent it faithfully to Greg, who was still, Jimmy was his sponsor, and, you know, he was in with everybody and volunteer at the office. So I was not an unknown entity. And one of the troubles I have with my life, and I'm human enough to need to mention this, is I heard Jack Whaley on one of the tapes talk about, he went to Valley College and took a course in something, sociology or something. He said there's two kind of leaders. One's an administrative leader, one is a symbolic leader. Symbolic leader is the guy that's going like, if the cause is right, the money will be there. And the administrative leader is the gal, the girl off to the side, like, who's going to pay for this? We can need insurance? They're rubbing their chin usually. And that's the administrative leader. So I'm both. And that really upsets people because then if they know me as a symbolic leader, they don't expect me to be competent. So if I start calling reports and exhibiting some degree of competence, then they get really mad at me. Like I've betrayed them or lied, but it's really on them. You don't have to be stupid to be nice. And somebody told me down the street, said, "Bo, down the strip when I was doing that thing. He said, you know, you people mistake kindness for weakness, you know. And so anyway, that's a problem. But I pray for strength and guidance. I usually get it. So they made me wear a lit chair. So with all that I've just told you, and a little bit of college, and, you know, English 101, 102, 103, 104, 105, 106, it seemed to me the best thing was to have a literature conference in the coming year between the two coasts. So nobody could complain, well, I would have come, but it, you know, it was way away from where I live. Well, so we picked a place that was well away from where anybody lived almost, except for a lot of people out on the prairie in Wichita, Kansas. And they, I don't know if y'all think this is probably rude as hell, but you know, locally they would say Wichita, Kansas. But we had a blast out there. And we got a ton of work done. And we had a nice, we only had about 25 people show up, but we had the community center in downtown Wichita at a shopping center. And so we had it for a long weekend. And we began it at the Ash House, which was in a clubhouse where NA meetings were held, separate by traditions. And we started with the not quite yet immortal words, well, we're here, what are we gonna do? And I ask everybody present to say their name, where they're from, and what they'd like to see and view as possible for this coming weekend. And so I write Ed C, Mark M, Cassidy J, and I'd write down what they said, what they, you know. And then the summation was that we would work on ideas and have workshops for a handbook for literature committees. Because that would give everybody a start point, everybody kind of on the same page, if we were successful. So we worked very hard that weekend, and a guy named Cliff H. Was the host chair. And after the event, you know, I'm back in Georgia, I'm calling up Cliff, where are the minutes? She went, you know, we won't send the minutes out. I promised to send the minutes out. Where the hell are the minutes? And he's bashful about it, and keeps saying, well, I'll try to get somebody in. And I said, look, Cliff, I'm the chair. You just send me the damn minutes, and I'll work it out. We can work it out. We're clever. I attended all the workshops. And so he finally knuckled under and did that. He didn't want to, but he did it. I got him. I handed him off to a couple of executive secretary types in Marietta, and they went through it. They couldn't make heads or tails out of them. They weren't really minutes at all. They were awful. They were terribly embarrassing. And yet I could see the thread, and I knew the different workshops and what had come, you know, I'd physically go in and sit in with them, sit in with them. So we wound up coming up with a handbook that you can get free off of an archives or other places. You might be able to Google in a literature or something like that. Okay, so we had a chapter on how to raise money within traditions, how to write your story, topics to write on for input to the basic text, how to form a lit committee, how to form a local newsletter, and other subjects, everything that we could dream of. And then, so I transposed what was visible through the minutes, and it pretty well covered every damn thing. So that became the handbook for NA lit committees. And then local printer Phil Page says, you know, you can take that over to Marietta Reaper Graphs and get it typeset. I said, well, okay, what about typos? He said, they'll mark them and you tell them and they'll correct them. Okay, and I'll print it for free. I said, okay. So that's how you got your handbook for NA lit committees. And I think it's a very interesting archive myself. And, you know, I was answerable to a lot of other people, and it was their thinking and ideas and energy that went into it. And I think modern members may not get this, but there's, you know, a representative was highly regarded in Narcotics Anonymous because a representative went around to the group members, the regular group members, the steering committee, and went past, they brought up subjects and discussed them with group members, and then that's what they voted. and you could either see whether your group representative was doing that or not. It was even more visible at the area and regional level. And then that's what the RSR, the Regional Service Representative, took to the World Service Conference. So that was a real something. It was really voted on how members really felt. They don't do that. They don't even call them representatives anymore. That's another workshop. See you later. So I go out there, and we get, Ophelia prints me 1,000 copies of this little booklet, you know, NA Literature, Handbook for NA Literature Committees. And I go to conference, and we had passed the deadline to send out for approval, which was just not too important to us, and so we didn't take it to, we tried to make the deadline, we just missed it, that's all. And so we didn't expect it to be approved or anything. Well, unfortunately, it was approved at the conference. So we didn't understand the, you know, that P word. And they never once sent out a single copy of it. So they got it approved to kill it. I mean, that's book burning. And so fortunately, we had 1,000 copies that we sent them out everywhere for free. And you know, we got stuck with the postage, but I mean, we paid our own way. Travel and food and accommodations. And, you know, I was happy enough to sleep on the floor. And I knew from my 2 years on the Strip, there was no help for the attic anywhere on the face of the planet. Somebody else brought a synod. I flew out and met Chuck Zekridge, went to their board of trustees and all that. They were really, this was before I was in the program, so they really got kind of weird when I brought up, but yeah, I still drink beer. And, because, you know, that's not a drug, clearly. And, but outside of that, I played 3 Synod games, so I really had some background by the time I got in the NA World Services. So, anyway, I got approved, and, you know, what can you say? And I kind of, you may not understand what I'm doing, but if I tell you this, you may catch me biting my tongue. That's what it looks like for the tape. I'm sticking my tongue out and I'm showing my teeth biting. Because sometimes the best thing you can say is nothing at all. So I said as little as possible. And also that first year, I had been charged with the duty of sending out the work of the one and only past lit conference, or lit chair, to get it, you know, viewed by members so they could vote on it at next conference, right? Well, I never got that. I don't even go into where we're and how and all that, but I never got it. And so I didn't even bring it up until I got elected. And, you know, it's another little, you know, WSC lit committee and WSO thing. So I never got the finals, so I never sent things out. But it was very clear that the lit committee was in charge of sending out its own review forms. Now that'll become important later. So a lot of times when I'm biting my tongue, I'm doing something really helpful. And that turned out to be a major thing. You're gonna think about it in just a couple of seconds here. So, we had the handbook. We had been putting out some materials to where the idea was starting to take form in the fellowship mind, and some people were actually sending in, you know, stuff. And one of the things I had studied when I was 14 years old was Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. So I would write him back a letter good enough to where Jimmy's girlfriend came on, and Jimmy said, "You know that stuff I sent out to the World Lit Committee?" And wrote me a letter, "You want to read it?" And I said, "Oh, we loved your material." And I sent it out to the other local lit committees, and I did too. And so they could double check me and find out I was telling the truth. Once I won their belief, I could only had to maintain it, which I was happy to do. And that's how we built a system of, you know, service in Narcotics Anonymous. And one of the lies they told us, or misleading statements, let's say, was, "Oh no, you can't do that. That'd take a fellowship-wide group conscience." I said, "Really? How do you do that?" He says, "Oh, there's never been one." And I said, "Really?" And I mean, you know, we invented a fellowship-wide group conscience. I even created a three-part form to where you could remember what you had written and give a copy to your RSR or your area they gave to the RSR, and then send a third copy to the World Service Conference, to where at every conference, the H&I subcommittee would go through all the input, suggestions, questions, whatever, and answer them to each and every regional service representatives, and then take the response back to their home region, area, group, and member. Do you see how the system was so cool? And it gave every single member of our worldwide fellowship a say. And a lot of times, it's not like 50 different suggestions. It's 50 suggestions, and the 10 of them are the same, and then 12 of them are the same, and then they group themselves kind of. So it's even easier than it sounds. It sounds pretty easy, I hope. And that was the World Service Conference. You no longer have that. Most of you don't even know that the subcommittees of the World Service Conference have been shut down. That was done some time ago. But back not then. So we set another conference, you know, equidistant between the coast, and that was at Lincoln, Nebraska. And the host committee, Jim Nichols, when I shared about past members, Jim Nichols was the chair of that. And he got us the downstairs, like marble post office building. I mean, the federal building in downtown Lincoln, Nebraska. So we all showed up. And then we heard that the committee there had given blood for something. It finally pans out it was like for stamps, you know, to mail out flowers announcing the lit conference. And a cowboy actually came in off the Platte River because he had gotten addicted in the trenches in Europe. And he heard there was something going on to help addicts. So he was illiterate. So I said one of our ladies, you know, write down his story by hand. So it was just such an honor to be involved with something like that. It's like, you know, addicts, you know, when we're in a lot of pain and agony, we dream that we know there's something better, but we just can't find it. And all of a sudden it was right there. Sorry about that. I frequently do things like that. Thank you. And I just knocked over the other microphone. I think God will forgive me. But anyway, we had a hell of a damn conference in Lincoln, and I'm remembering it as if we were in the room there, in this building today. And this one guy just kept interrupting and throwing his hands up and just saying really illogical things. And yeah, I think this year, you know, the 25 at Wichita, I think we had like 30 or 35 at Lincoln. And I was chair, but to me, the art of being a good chair is to do as little as possible. Encourage other people to do it. Let them get the glory and stay the hell out of it. Just, you know, be supportive. And so this young lady over here, he keeps breaking in. She raises her hand, yes. And she says, sir, sir, we're writing this book for you, but you can't stop us, so you have to leave. We're not mad at you, but you can't interrupt no more. It was obvious he was loaded, you know. Anybody who's ever done methadone knows what I'm talking about. But he couldn't stop talking, poor fellow. And then this other really ardent clean addict named Dean from Newport Beach, California. He would get so riled up, he'd break ashtrays. He'd just grab these big old damn ashtrays and bust them on the floor. Kind of a punctuation, you know? And we finally, as chair, I said, Dean, you can't break any more ashtrays now. That's it. Just, if you break one more, you're going to have to take a hike. And you know, a lot of us went through hell getting to Lincoln, you know, to begin with. So you know, he lasted about 15 minutes and broke another one, got up and left. But his story was the longest story that anybody submitted to the basic text. It was 25 pages long. And it was really good, because he was crazy. And he said, they always send the crazy ones to me. He believed him. But anyway, during Lincoln, once it started going, you know, we were the World Convention no longer followed Icky Pop. If you don't know what that means, I don't even tell you. It now followed the Lick Conference, so the World Convention was in Wichita. And I actually got a couple of guys that later got very, very involved with the Lick Committee from Louisiana through Wichita. Lincoln's 200 miles up the road. So we had a heavy duty copier and then a smaller copier and lots of paper, and I think about 10 Selectrics. We just worshiped Selectrics. And some of our members could type so well. I mean, Jim, I think, misquoted earlier, Roger could type 200 words a minute. It was really scary. But his addiction, he was sitting in a basement in Memphis typing still all day, and so he was just extraordinarily good at that. And so in Lincoln, we had a lot of input. And Greg Pierce and Bob Barrett came out from the Board of Trustees, because the World Service Board of Trustees broke up its subcommittee system and paired off and supported HNIPI literature and whatever, okay? So that's how supportive the trustees were, the fledgling, you know, kind of brand new, you know, lit committees. And so they were both on hand, and the idea of making, so we had all these pages and pages of input. So we photocopied the entire 800 pages. And then we had these attending members read through and find this sentence or paragraph or whatever relates to this item on the, you know, 10 topic outline taken from the white booklet. We added three chapters in the course of things, an hour or later. But so we would have a really good sentence here. The first line of the basic text was pain is our common denominator. And then, you know, each person would have like a pile of little papers, and we'd go over Roman number one, and then A, and then 1, 2, 3, and then B, 1, 2, 3, 4. And we'd even get down to the lowercase a and b. And so at the end, we pasted them all up, counted in order, and all the input was there someplace. And the typists were encouraged to build bridge sentences and make it kind of flow. If you have to supply a connective sentence or phrase or paragraph, then just do it. Because it's all going to be subjected to group conscience. And so after a while, it took a while, but we did that. The interesting thing that if you're profoundly blessed and lucky, you may actually participate in a conference like this. But after the first day or two, everybody knew they were going to be involved, serious, they could be recognized, raise their hand. Nobody was going to be left out. Nobody was left out. We never turned away anybody except for that one guy that was loaded and the ashtray breaker. But what can you do? But anyway, so it was all typed up and it was going. I mean, the flow was there. And after the second or third day, it started going faster. And everybody was relaxed and everybody was safe and comfortable and it was happening. Everybody got really good energy. And we had good food and good coffee, you know. And typists over there, they could just feel it. They could feel it. After all these years, we were going to get our book. So we pretty much kept a straight face, like I'm having trouble doing now. But we knew a miracle when we saw it. And we weren't going to get finished. After a few days, we could realize that. But we got a hell of a lot done. And we did get the cut and paste typed up. So that was good. And then when you read it in a group setting, you know, the going to meetings and all that, you have a certain feel for things that are that feel right in NA literature. So those things kind of multiplied themselves, and the things that didn't fit too good got either softened or flattened or left out. And that's where your basic text came from. We knew we weren't done yet processing them. And there was an involved effort to get some work done in the local lit committees, which we had 14 of them by then. But we had to hold another conference. We decided to hold it before the next WSC because we were the lit committee and we knew what to do next. And so we wanted to, you know, like, what, this September of 80, so when would we do it? The conference is in April. Why not February? I mean, it's southern, you know, snow be bad down here. And so that's when we did it. And there was this one guy that suggested Memphis, and he was kind of a good talker, Joe Proctor. And so we held it in Memphis. No meetings in Memphis, went home and started a bunch. And I could go on and on about Joe Proctor's one of my heroes from the lit movement. And he was the one that got all the printing done for us. And anyway, so we all showed up in Memphis in February, and we continued the process, and the flow readings got better and better, and the chapters got smoother and smoother, and contained all of the germane experience, strength, and hope as submitted by inputting members. And it became more and more beautiful. And it was read again and again and again and edited again and again. Every line was edited again and again and again. And the folks were like really beautiful, and they were moving quick now. And there were a lot of technical things I won't go into. There's writing about that if you're interested. But the main thing is, about midweek, we realized we were going to get done. And Linda M. was in charge of the blackboard, and she had a little, you know, for every, you know, first draft, second draft, third draft. So if you ever look at some of the paperwork from back then, it'll say the name of the location, like Memphis, and then if it says Memphis 1, that's the first draft, the second, the third. So that's how you can, it's sensible, right? And the blackboard is filling up fast. So around Wednesday, driving to get some supplies, I said, Joe, well, what, if we get done, we were in a car, I said, what, I wonder what it would cost to do do like a review form or something, you know, of our results. And he said, I think about $3,000. I said, God, that's a lot of money. What would we do? And so we get to the store and we get on back to the conference, and I say, Joe, how much would it cost to get the books printed and sent out? And he's the one, everybody said, where should we send this review form that we're going to make? Who are the favored persons to get a copy? And you can just flash through your mind, like, you know, what flashed through our mind. And then Joe said, well, I'll thank every group in the world. Everybody got eye contact, and we all said, yeah, okay, yeah, I can dig that. San Francisco sent $1,000 before they had their first fundraiser. We raised $17,000 in 2 weeks flat. We had the whole thing typed up with line numbers and pagination for 10 chapters and sent it out free to every group in the world, including India and Ireland and all over the world. And boy, that felt good. When we got the books in Atlanta, we drove around the rest of the night and handed them out to people who had helped at Memphis. And with, you know, the idea of the dream of a book became a reality almost overnight. Everywhere. Y'all got books here. You got books in LA. You got books in Texas and Kansas City and New York and London, everywhere, Ireland. So, this is another kind of a summary statement, because I only have a few more minutes, but I'm not at all disappointed, because now maybe you know a little bit of what it felt like. And boy, we were like absolutely sold and educated. Everybody that participated on 12 steps and 12 traditions, we were the first large group of informed Narcotics Anonymous members, and we were on fire. We said a prayer that I, 25 years later, I realized this is the prayer that changed the Narcotics Anonymous Fellowship. And you can ask me after the thing, and I'll recite it very slowly. God, free me of my self-will and ego, and give me the strength and guidance to do your footwork. And suddenly people that couldn't write, addicts who recovery can't write, did write, and they wrote a lot, and they never stopped writing. And also, with that prayer, nobody ever switched it off that I know of. So the people that wrote the basic text went home and started 10,000 meetings. Now that's why we grew from 600 meetings in February to 1,800 in November. That's why, or September, whenever the hell it was. And the rest was completing the process. It was other conferences to deal with stories, to deal with chapters and get the focus ever more sharp and clear and simple. And one chapter, one of the girls, Gina, she called it the amazing shrinking chapter because everybody got into concision. Concision's horrible. It leaves out adjectives and adverbs and it really doesn't supply the information that a well-written sentence does. And so my personal life went to hell. I got divorced. I lost my children, lost my business. And I was willing to leave everything. I was a fundraiser. I think I was my account was empty, had no credit debit cards in those days. And I put my last $5 in the basket for the book in Florida. And I thought, well, like, I've only got $5. And then I thought, well, like, why don't you just go all the way? So I did. And, you know, I'm happy. Both of my sons are clean and grown up. Well, they drank a little bit, but they're modified. And one of them was in the program for 5 years. And if he ever gets in bad trouble, he'll come in. Both of them have got excellent jobs in electronics and AT&T. One of them's given me two grandsons. Daddy died last Christmas. My house burned up in November of 2012. But you know, I'd given away so much stuff, I can get it back from friends because I gave out a lot of copies. And I ain't worried about it. And all the people that I know and love and care about, they're still in there. And all the know-how about sign painting and, you know, real precise technical screen printing, I got no trouble with that. I could do it in 5 minutes. And so it's amazing, you know, to have your whole house burn up without a sense of loss. And I got a hell of a check from the insurance company. And so my advice to you is pay your insurance before anything else. But nobody even found out the cause of the fire. I didn't do it, but something did it. And the literature movement had a series of chairs. I stayed on in World Services, and as a trustee, I tried to encourage the lit chairs and this, that, and the other. But all of a sudden, I slowly realized that as hard as we were working, there was another kind of member that was doing something else, and they were planning to take over, and they wanted to make money, and that was the big deal, and that's who took over. So that's why you have a delegate instead of a representative. So the more we can do to inform our fellowship, the purpose of reading and study is so you can discuss almost any topic without fear or anger. And especially if you're afraid or angry, then you need to study more. It's the cure. And I watched some Stephen King because I fancy myself a writer nowadays and a little bit of a publisher. And so I'm watching old Stephen King. You know, he's in the program. And I think he's read our stuff. But he was saying that books are the perfect weapon for war against the assholes of the world. Thank you.